Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
I mean, the worst season that they've ever had. I think that the NBA has a lot of things that it has to figure out. But this 65-game rule, I think, is punishing players who get legitimately injured, and it shouldn't be doing that, especially if they're not going to miss the threshold by a ton of games. Like, I don't know. And listen, yeah, we're having the conversation because Nikola Jokic got hurt. Okay? That is why we're having the conversation. I understand that. But it's because he's arguably the best player in the world, and he's hurt, yeah. And now he's going to miss out on all these awards. And it's going to take away from the end of the season with an awards race. Yeah, I get it. We're having that conversation. People say, why not Joel Embiid? Joel Embiid isn't the same player as Jokic, all right? Joel Embiid is a former MVP player, but he hasn't had nearly the impact in the NBA the last few seasons as Jokic. He hasn't had nearly the impact historically. He doesn't have a ring. He's never sniffed a ring. He's not as important to the NBA as Nikola Jokic is. That's why we're having the conversation. And if that upsets you, welcome to the new world. Welcome.
Truly.
It's about money. It's about having your best players on the court. It's about being able to award these best guys.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid isn't that anymore. When he plays, sometimes he's great. Most of the time, he's not. Most of the time, he's not playing. So that's why we're not having the conversation about Joel Embiid. Because he hasn't had a season in which he would have played 65 games or barely missed 65 games in a long time.
It's been three years.
So that's why we're not having the conversation about
Meanwhile, in those 3 years that it's been since then, you know, Jokic is only...
He's missed, like, what, five games? If even that?
He only played 70 last year.
Oh.
He played 79 the year before that. Oh, by the way, in those 70 games last year, he averaged a 29-point triple-double.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the all-time greats. We're having a conversation about a rule because of an all-time great got hurt. Welcome to the new world.
If SGA,
it's not surprising.
Like you said, if SGA went down with a major injury,
we'd also be having the conversation.
We'd be having the same conversation.
Yeah, we would.
Because he's one of the best players in the league. If not, I mean, he's the reigning MVP who then goes into the next season and says, hey, you know that thing that I got last year? I think I'm going to hold on to that. I think I'm going to also, you know, continue my streak of scoring 20 points a game for, what is it now? Almost an entire season's worth of games. I want to keep doing that.
Yes. Again, I also think that we've been having this conversation. It's just at the forefront now because of Jokic. And listen, if your response to me is, I think that 65 games and games played should matter for awards, I'll hear that. What I'm not okay with, though, is the contract still tied to it. So right. If you want to keep the 65-game rule and you want to say games played matters for awards, I can hear an argument for that. What I won't hear is it still needs to be in place for people's contracts and how it impacts teams and impacts players' money. I'm not okay with that. Let's find out what Parker Fleming has to say about that. He will join me after the break. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on The Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Welcome back into The Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. I'm now joined by the founder and CEO of Substack Elitist at Grizzlies, an NBA draft free Substack. All support, and I mean all support, goes to St. Jude. Not a single cent goes into Parker's pocket. You can find him on Twitter, at @Paka_Flocka. Parker, how are you, my friend?
Connor, I'm doing great, man. You know, bringing back the days of Run It Back and when you would be almost like my weekly guest on my GBV pod.
Right.
And
Hoops
CEO.
Island.
Yo, I like that. Hoops Island. Yep. Yeah. A lot of stuff, a lot of projects, but... Glad to be talking to you, Connor. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you, my friend. So George and I did our now annual Grizzlies Grades State of the Union for the Memphis Grizzlies. And I sent you a preview of it so that you would be prepared. But I wanted to go through my grades for the Grizzlies and just get your opinion on them. You can disagree if you want to. You can offer suggestion. Let me know your thoughts on all of them. The first one that we started off with and ended up being the longest conversation of them, which I think makes sense, was our conversation about Ja Morant. I gave Ja Morant a C, and both of us kind of landed on, I think I was being generous by giving him a C, but a lot of it is we are betting on him being more of the Ja Morant of old than the Ja Morant of recent as the season continues.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, it's one of those, I mean, if we're at season's midpoint with Ja, I would personally go C-.
Okay.
Because obviously I don't want to ding him too much for the injuries Very, very unlucky timing. I feel like all of his injuries have been that, but like he hasn't been a All-NBA caliber player this year. Hasn't been an All-Star kind of player this year. And one of the most ineffective scoring seasons among players with his volume of scoring. But yeah, I mean, there's the flashes of, hey, this is like John Morant still has that talent in him. I mean, the opener against New Orleans, the road game against Phoenix, but also too that game the other night against Milwaukee where he's just slicing the Milwaukee defense with his passing. And, you know, that's what I've been screaming for about a year now is like, I want to see Ja Morant is just more tapped into his passing because he is a special passer. He is one of the best passing point guards, if not the best passing point guard in the NBA. And when he has that combination of speed and gear shifting and his vision, he can just kind of create looks out of nothing. And I think that could be a very effective way for Ja Morant to impact winning while getting his groove back as a scorer, as a finisher. And I know the big thing for him and for Isla, they both said, is just getting games under his belt. As he's getting games under his belt, I would love for him to find his rhythm into the offense as a passer first, because then if defenses are playing the pass, maybe that opens up clear lanes for you to get to the basket, get to your floater zone, and really kind of literally take what the defense gives you. Like, it sounds as cliche as it is, like, that's the case. But, I mean, if we're grading off of right now, he hasn't been that guy as consistently as the Grizzlies would have liked. And then, you know, there's also the early season
right
dust-up that he had with Isolo that, quite frankly, cost them several games after that, you know, which is the overall energy around just the entire game after that. I felt like everything was just kind of like walking on eggshells almost. And I think if it wasn't for that, we'd be looking at the Grizzlies differently. They wouldn't be two games below 500. I know that for sure. So that's kind of where my reasoning is with, like, instead of a C, it's more of a C minus and a pie eyes.
I think that's fair. How important do you think it is to Ja's game, but also the Grizzlies game overall on offense, for him to truly develop a mid-range shot and a three-point shot? Because when you look at his fit on this roster, even when you have a Zach Edey back, I think it's going to make Ja Morant's play better. And I do think that some of the conversation about, well, the team looked better in the stretch with Zach Edey back without Ja Morant, I think that was more about Zach Edey just makes things function on this team a lot better than it really did with Ja's absence. But when he's back with Zach Edey, if he can develop a jump shot at all, you add a dynamic to that pick and roll that can really become devastating for another team. But that feels like the next evolution that we've been waiting for in Ja Morant's game for a few seasons now, and it just hasn't come. Not only do I think it will help your offense and it will help his fit with Zach Edey a little bit if he can have a pick and pop, I just also think it's going to prevent injury more. He's not going to be driving to the basket as much. A undersized point guard that relies on driving to the basket, we see that they hit a wall in their career over and over and over again. And the only way that those guys were able to extend their career or change as they went on was developing a jumper. And that feels necessary for Ja. And I think that this season, even though he's only played 16 games, has been a sample size for you have to develop that jump shot or you're never going to evolve as a player.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, I do think, too, like, there is also the grace of, like, hey, he hasn't played with Zach Edey yet. And, you know, Zach Edey, one of the best free-and-roll big men in the league.
Right.
Not just because of his size and the screening, but, I mean, on, like, a per-possession basis dating back to last season, one of the most effective rollers in the league. I mean, because it's quite simple. You can just throw it up to the 7'4" guy. He's going to get it, and he's going to dunk it. Like, it's quite simple. And when you have to account for that kind of gravity, it's just going to open up the entire floor. And maybe it is for Ja Morant to get a clean look into the mid-range and kind of step into something that's rather easy. And quite frankly, the mid-range promise is there. He's shooting, say, 90-something percent from the free throw line this
year. Right.
The promise is there. But if teams start playing the mid-range, guess what you have now? You can spray it out to shooters, where now you're a little bit more equipped than you have been recently, you know, Jaren Jackson, Salty Aldama have definitely kind of been trending towards like league average over the past two seasons, which is a very important development for seven footers. Jalen Wells, Cedric Howard, Cam Spencer. Like, Cam Spencer is one of the best shooters in the league right now.
Right. Well, and you saw that be effective with Edie. Like, Vince Williams Jr., when he was running point, and he would take that three every once in a while. Cam Spencer, when he would run point, and he would do it with Zach Edey, he would take that three every once in a while. It forced the defense to spread out a little bit more, and it created more opportunities for their teammates. So that's just – that's the next evolution. And the thing is with Ja, I still think that the all-star level player, all-NBA guy, is still in there. And I still believe in that player. I'm choosing to believe in that player. We just have to see it, because it does feel like that this is kind of a crossroads type of season for the Grizzlies with Ja, where they've got to figure out whether or not they can get through a whole year with him playing a majority of the games. Like, just play a majority of the games and maybe we can keep this thing rolling. But if it's another season where he only plays 30-something games, I do think that hard conversations will have to be had. But we're not there yet. Moving on to the next guy, Jaren Jackson Jr. I gave Jaren a B. I think that he had that one really bad stretch of basketball. George and I'm sorry, actually, we decided to give him a B+ after some discussion. So we upgraded his grade from a B to a B+, because he had that one really bad stretch of basketball, but he's been consistently there for the Grizzlies this year. His last 10 games have been really good for the team. His defense has shown up again in a big way. He's had three or more blocks in five of the last seven games. And he, in my opinion, is the most dynamic guy offensively for the Grizzlies. So they have got to, he's got to be a focal point on offense for them, because he can score at all three levels. And I'm just not sure if the rest of the team can do that.
Yeah, I mean, look, no notes on that. Like, you kind of hit all my talking points. One thing I will add that's kind of an interesting wrinkle in this that was discussed after the game on Friday against Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Was, for one, there was coming back from injury. There was both Jaren and Eastlope talked about coming back from injury, you know, and there's some rust he had to shake off, and maybe he was doing too much too quick. But also, too, Eastlope was also like, I had to get to know him better and figure out his game. Because, like I've said, like, with Eastlope, like, guys of Jaren's skill set aren't, Even at a scaled down talent level, the guys with Jaren's skill set are not in Europe. They're in the NBA.
Right.
You know, like, even with lesser talent, they're typically in the NBA. You know, 6'11", 7-foot guys that could face the floor, protect the rim as an anchor and as a weak side rim protector, like, and switch a little bit. Like, those guys are in the NBA. Like, so Eastlope has to, because, I mean, Eastlope's system has always been at the helm of things, has been a speedy point guard, not a 7-foot, I don't want to say the term unicorn, but essentially a 7-footer that can put the ball on the deck and score in variety ways, and he's a mismatch nightmare to where he's going to attack closeouts on fives, and he's just going to post up fours. Like, he never has had a player like Jaren Jackson Jr. before, and I think it took adjusting for both parties, for both Jaren, for both Eastlope, and the injury. But yeah, I mean, as of late, he's played like an all-star. He's played like a guy that the Grizzlies paid $50 million this offseason for. So, yeah, I would say a B-plus for him, for sure.
So the next guy, you briefly mentioned him there, but he is someone that you have described as a 7-footer that does not just appear on the street with the skill set that he has. I gave Santi Aldama a B-plus for this season. I think he's been one of the most valuable Grizzlies this year. He has struggled in moments against some of the better teams, but he has mostly really shown up. I think his rebounding has improved this year. His defense still leaves some to be desired, but for the most part, he gives effort and energy there. And his scoring has been vital for this team this season. And when he's in his actual role as a bench guy for the Grizzlies, he's been extremely effective. I gave Santi a B+.
Yeah, Santi, B+ for me. I think he's been rather consistent this year. Like, I think he's, you know, when they traded Desmond Bane, I was like, who's the third guy? Who's the third leading scorer? And Santi Aldama has shown that more often than others. And I just think that there's just a uniqueness to his game where there's not a lot of guys that can dribble pass shoot. And, like, the fact, too, that he's also a, because he shoots on volume, he can put the ball in the deck and he has creative reads. I mean, I watched that play the other night against Washington where he attacked the closeout on the three and just threw a behind the back pass to Jaren, who had an and one from three. Like where else are you finding that? You know? Granted, this isn't me saying like, oh my gosh, like Dante Aldama could be a all-star, all-NBA caliber player, but it's kind of like, hey, this is a very valuable player, because the thing is, too, that he's so interchangeable with how he can be used, because his skill set allows him to function as both a wing and a big. And with the defense, yeah, he's not a, like, I think anybody will tell you he's not a great defender, but there's three things I look at that he does. He gives effort, he's a tall contest, whether it's from three or at the rim, and he's been grabbing rebounds now for the past 2 years. I think that whole narrative is dead. Like he's a good rebounder when he plays consistent minutes. He's a really good rebounder on a per minute basis. Like, yeah, I would say he should be getting a B plus.
Next guy up, he was mentioned briefly there as well in the Magic trade. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Now, in this grading, I took into account the starting games where he had to start, because you can't ignore those, and those were bad. Those were just straight up bad. But I'm choosing to focus mostly on the bench play of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and that's why overall I gave him a B this year. I think that as a bench player for the Grizzlies, as a veteran coming off of that there, he's been shooting about 40% from three, he's been really effective in their offense, and he's been giving you things defensively. KCP gets a B from me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, essentially a 3-and-D guy that he's also been showing that he can come off screens, come off handoffs, and step into a mid-range jumper, defending really well. He's averaging close to like 3 assists a game this year, which has been, you know, a nice little development with the Grizzlies missing Ty Jerome and Scottie Pippen Jr. and then John Moran as well for times of the season. Like, and also just ultimate pro, ultimate vet. I mean, this guy, you didn't hear a single complaint about him coming off the bench for Cedric Howard. Like, he took it, and he's been effective in his bench role. So, yeah, I would agree with that grade. Even with as bad as his start has been, I would still give him about a B this season.
Next up, I have Cedric Howard, the Grizzlies rookie. I think he's been tremendous this year. He's hit a bit of a rookie wall, but not too bad. It's just, it's really mostly you see in his three-point shooting. His three-point shooting is a bit of a slump here, but I think that the shot looks good, so keep shooting it, young man, is what I would say to Cedric Howard. And George brought up a great point. He hasn't played this number of games in many years. So, of course, you know, his body is not used to it yet. So we should see Cedric Howard find himself, I think, in the weeks moving forward. But right now, I gave Cedric Howard an A-. I think he's been tremendous for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point I didn't really think about. George knows ball there.
George knows ball.
But George knows ball. But, you know, I would say with Cedric Howard, A- for me as well. But what I've noticed is a lot of his bad games are never just like he's playing bad. It's just that he's shooting bad.
Right.
And I think that means a lot. He's been a huge presence on the glass. I think the playmaking is far more ahead than I would have expected. I would say the next step in his development that I would like to see, especially from a guy with his athletic tools and his 7'2" wingspan, is I'd like to see a little bit more of like the defensive chaos, you know, be a little bit more aggressive, jumping in the passing lanes to generate pick sixes, you know, offer more help as a weak side rim protector, which that might just be more of a product of him being more defensive attack rather than being off the ball. That's probably the only thing I think is the next step for his development, because, I mean, Jalen Wells is already a low stocks guy because his primary focus is just making sure that the opposing star creator doesn't go off. Like, I give him grace, but like I do want Coward to help kind of make up for that by kind of just getting a little bit crazier in the passing lanes and with his rim protection. You know, liken it to got Grizzlies at the pass, like De'Anthony Melton and Kyle Anderson. Just caused a little bit more chaos defensively, and I think that would be a very, very good step for Cedric Howard.
De'Anthony Melton mentioned made my heart flutter. God, I miss him.
Yeah, that's what I did there. That's what I was trying to do.
I miss Melt, man. I miss Melt. If only his knees allowed him to be a Memphis Grizzly moving forward. But next up, I have Jalen Wells. I'm going to run through these a little bit more quickly so we can get to other topics. But Jalen Wells, I have it a B+. That seems fair. Started off the season pretty slow. Has really kind of grown into himself this season. Shooting the ball very well. Arguably their best defender. Jalen Wells gets a B+ for me. Jock Landale also got a B+ for me in his bench role. I think he's been very good for the Grizzlies, doing exactly what they wanted him to do when they brought him in. By the way, good news. Coach Isolo said that Jock Landale is trending toward playing tonight. So that's very good news for the Memphis Grizzlies. He will certainly help on the boards, and he's been offering a three-point shot. Cam Spencer got an A-plus for me. Don't think I have to say much about it. He's been unreal for the Grizzlies, a true find, a dog when he's out there on the court. I think winning sticks to this kid. He hunts shots on the three-point line. He's exactly what you want to be in your young core for the Grizzlies. Zach Edey, of course, got an A-plus for me. Just truly was playing at an all-star level this year when he was in the game. Vince Williams Jr. got a B from me. That was only because he wasn't available all the time, but I think he's been really valuable when he has been healthy. The guy that I wanted to talk to you about next was someone that you wrote about recently, and I know he doesn't have a big game sample size, but what I saw from him I thought was encouraging. I gave G.G. Jackson a B-, and then we kind of floated him to about a B after we had some discussion, just because I feel like in the few games that we've seen him in, we've still seen that he can score the ball, but that defense is starting to take strides in the right direction, and that is really exciting if you're a Grizzlies fan.
For sure. I mean, I think one thing he probably lost sight of, and just how electric his scoring was in his rookie season, that, you know, was kind of a lost season for the Grizzlies overall, was the fact that he just turned 21 years old.
Right.
And, the different nuances of the game weren't going to be at the level of his scoring. But, I mean, I've seen here recently, you know, he's nice and steady at the point of attack. You know, even if he feels the contact of the screen, he's making a concerted effort to get back at the ball handler's hip and just kind of be there when driving. And, I plan on getting, diving deeper into this, as Connor alluded to. I included a couple clips from his defense in my film roundup that I do weekly because it is a very significant development to monitor. You know, we got to see if it sticks, but it's still significant. I know Sean Coleman at the Revamped Grizzly Bear Blues wrote on it as well, but the thing I'm seeing with him is just that point of attack defense, that just that steadiness that he offers because he's 6'9" and doesn't have a negative wingspan. Like, I think that matters. But also, too, the stock creation as well. I want to say he's generated 12 stocks over four games in this sample size. And, again, that's significant because guess what that also leads to for G.G. Jackson? It leads to transition scoring. And G.G. Jackson is at his best when he has a head full of steam downhill. So, yeah, I think this is a very encouraging development to monitor. You know, I'm not going to envy Isolo when it comes to how does he manage a healthier rotation. Mm-hmm. But I think G.G. Jackson has made it quite an interesting challenge, I would say.
Yeah, and to be honest, this grade is almost exclusively about his defense because we don't need to question Gigi's offensive ability. The only thing that, and I wouldn't even say we've been questioning it, it's been more we've been waiting on the development of Gigi because he is still so young. Like you said, he just now can go on Beale Street past like 11 o'clock. So let's give the young man some time to develop in the NBA before we paint him with a paintbrush and decide his fate. His defense has, it's just, there's been a couple of moments of flashes, and there is no secret within the Grizzlies organization and from this coaching staff. If Gigi gives effort defensively, and he shows ability there, that's how he's going to get playing time. It has nothing to do with his offense. It has all to do with his defense because he's going to give you offense, but if you're erasing all that offense by him being a traffic cone, it's not necessarily helping your basketball team. So it's been a good development. Speaking of Coach Isolo, I gave him a C. Really rocky start to the season. I'm still not thrilled about everything he's been doing, but seems like he's figured it out with Ja Morant for the most part. And this basketball team is at least staying afloat amid all of the injuries, and I think he deserves some credit for that. Like you said, there's been some adjustment with Jaren Jackson Jr., but he seems to have realized, hey, the 7-footer who can hit a three and take people off the dribble and is a dominant ISO scorer, maybe I should turn him into a focal point. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration came from Grizzlies fans and myself was, we knew all these things already, Coach Isolo. Why'd you try to come in and reinvent the NBA? Like, you can't reinvent the NBA. This platoons thing doesn't work. Like, just let these guys play basketball. But in recent weeks, it feels like he has settled in a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I give him a B just because I don't think most teams, if you took away their two centers, as they have not, had E and Clark for a lot of the year. They haven't had a lot of ball handling with how Ja Morant's been in and out of the lineup, but they haven't had Ty Jerome and Scottie Pippen Jr. at all. And they've had it, and I want to give him credit. Like, they're, and there's still only two games below 500.
Right.
If you took most teams like that, they're probably not as, like, they might be as good or worse. I'm not saying, like, I'm not calling him the coach of the year candidate, but I think there's credit that needs to be given there. And I like how he's been adaptive with his, granted, the rotations may not be perfect. Guess what? Everybody complains about their coach's rotation. It just happens. Like, there's no, I haven't seen many coaches where they're free from rotation criticism. But I liked his adaptability where, like, you know, Zach Edey went down. I'm like, all right, well, we're back to Jock Landale starting. And he just goes ahead and starts Santi and
right.
Jaren.
Really good decision.
And then, you know, instead of, and then I liked how he just wasn't afraid to mix it up. And when all his guards were down, literally Ja, Ty, and Scotty plus Javon Small, he found something with Vince Williams and Cam Spencer. And quite frankly, that stretch of play has kind of helped Cam Spencer take off to the season he's had right now. And, you know, making him the indispensable part of this rotation. And also, too, I think also the fact that after whatever Noah LaRoche decided to do with Zach Edey last year, Tomas Eso said, hey, how about we just have this dude roll to the rim and post up mismatches and just give it to the big fella?
Yeah, well, let's let the 7'4" guy be 7'4".
Yeah, and then, you know, I thought he was pretty quick on replacing replacing KCP with Cedric Howard in the starting lineup because, you know, like, KCP is a, like, very accomplished vet. Like,
sure.
He's won two championships. He's played in the league for almost 15 years. They could have just done right by the vet and kept playing and kept starting him. But they didn't. Like, he slow went with Coward. And then I've seen just different stuff in closing time where it's like, okay, granted, some of it's not perfect. The minutes restrictions things kind of messed him up. And there's some times where I'm like, okay, 26 or 27 minutes won't hurt. But it's also like, okay, there's eight guys on the injury report. I don't want to push somebody 35 minutes and they get hurt and they join them and they're even more depleted. It's kind of a double-edged sword where I don't envy dealing with that problem. You know what I mean? So I just think there's a lot of variables at stake where, like, yeah, Isolo has done some stuff where it's like, okay, this isn't ideal, primarily with the rotations and mainly the whole thing was utilizing Jaren Jackson Jr. But I think for the most part, I think he deserves a little bit more praise than what's been given to him.
Okay. I'm going to stick with a C, but I understand your reasoning, and I think it's fair. I am going to be curious to see what his rotations look like with a full covered, if he ever gets one, because we are the Memphis Grizzlies, and who knows if this team's ever going to be healthy again. But I do think that sometimes the rotations, I think, partly have looked better because he doesn't have enough guys. He doesn't have as many guys as he used to have. So he's had to make adjustments, but he has. He has made the adjustments, so I'll give him some credit there. And then overall, I gave the team a C. They're right around 500. They beat bad teams. They lose to good teams. You're right in the middle. I think that they are power ranked at 17 on ESPN. So a C for the team this season felt fair. You have room to grow, but you also have room to sink. But they're right in the middle. I can't really give them more than a C right now.
Yeah, I mean, I give them a C+. The plus is just really kind of like the injury bump, you know, grading on a curve. But
fair.
I don't disagree with you on that one.
It's fair. And I wanted to talk to you about this because you briefly touched on it. The minutes restriction thing. George and I had a long conversation about it yesterday because I think that we have at minimum three games that the minutes restriction has cost you this season. And those games, one came to a Spurs team without Victor Wembanyama. One came to a Jazz team where you made Kevin Love look like he was in 2015 again, and then one came to the lowly Wizards that we saw just this past weekend. Now, I understand that Ja wasn't playing great in that game, but I still think that the minutes restriction with Cedric Howard hurt you because you needed more GG defensive minutes, which was not great in that game. I am just asking for three more minutes. I looked it up. The league average for minutes restriction is between 28 and 32 minutes. The Grizzlies have been capping it at 25. Can they just give me 28? Just give these guys 28 minutes, because that extra 3 minutes, I think, would have erased at least two of those losses. So that's all I'm asking, because I agree with you. It's a sticky situation. You are the most injured team I've ever seen over the last 3 years. I get being spooked by injury. But I think that holding these guys back and preventing your team from winning winnable basketball games when you were trying to float around 500 and be in the play-in right now is a bit short-sighted.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like I'm almost of the belief that – I mean, the Spurs one's different. I think the Spurs are genuinely a good team. And I think another callback you forgot to include on the Spurs one is Harrison Barnes turn back the clock to 2014.
He's always done that. Barnes has been a Grizzlies killer forever.
Yeah, I know, right? But I think those teams, especially the Jazz at home and then the Wizards who have they played decent basketball lately. They've won 4 of the last 7. 2 of those wins come against the Grizzlies.
God. Oh, Parker, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, no. I just think that they should win those games regardless, to be honest.
Sure.
Even if they have. The Spurs one, I would kind of, they're on the road. And even without Wembanyama, Cornette's good. I was beating the drum for Cornette before I knew Ty Jerome would have been a thing, but. I think they're a good team, but I agree. If maybe you had an extra minute or two of Coward in that Wizards game, I think you'd probably win that one.
Right.
That's really it. Yeah.
I was just going to say, speaking of injury, the big topic of today in the NBA has been Nikola Jokic going down, and he is now probably going to miss the 65 game mark to qualify for awards. And to be honest, I'm not sure the 65-game rule is accomplishing what the NBA wants it to. It was put in place to prevent tanking. It was put in place to prevent load management. And I think that it is ultimately punishing players who give a damn and play every single night who just happen to have injuries. Now, if you wanted to say, well, games matter for an NBA award, fine. But what I have a huge issue with is it being tied to people's money. What say you about the 65-game rule in the NBA?
It's stupid. I'm glad.
Okay.
It's stupid. I think they kind of had to do a little cover for themselves with these, they were trying to pitch to NBC and Amazon and, everybody makes a big deal about load management. But, I think this is where it gets dicey, especially with it tied to people's money. The Jokic thing, I also sent y'all before that, the dude is having an all-time season, and he may not even make All-NBA first team because he may play 62 games instead of 65. That is so stupid. Giannis Antetokounmpo, literally probably the definition of MVP with how valuable he is to that entire Bucks franchise, and he may not have the games required to be All-NBA. Victor Wembanyama, he calls himself a Defensive Player of the Year last year.
Right, might again this year.
He had a blood... And might have missed you. He had a blood clot last year. That's why he didn't. He had a blood clot. That's why he didn't play 65 games. And we punish him because he didn't play 65 games. And he's a guy that wants to play every night. I can go on and on. The Luka. But also, a few years ago, with the whole rookie extension, Tyrese Halliburton knew that there was $50 million at stake if he made All-NBA. He was playing at All-NBA level, hurt his hamstring, rushed back and wasn't the same the entire season. It leads to also these irrational decisions because you have this ultimately silly threshold and then it's tied to money with it. It leads to irresponsibility and it could actually lead to longer term injuries because guys are just trying to rush themselves back.
Right.
And from a Grizzlies standpoint, we saw that last year with Jaren Jackson Jr. There was big pressure on him to make All-NBA because it makes his contract extension easier. Sprains his ankle in March. He's played most of the season, and he's just going on a fast break, sprained his ankle, came back too quickly, and he wasn't the same for the rest of the season. So it's all very silly. Frankly, I don't like how there's significant contract incentives tied to people's money. Especially when those incentives, it's not like a points or rebounds or assists.
Right, it's folks.
Hey, did this media member think I'm an All-NBA player? Mm-hmm. Or did this media member think I'm an All-Defensive player? And I heard y'all earlier on the radio. Yeah, we have to talk about it because it happened to Nikola Jokic, who is an all-time great.
Yeah. Totally agree.
A guy that, he's an all-time great, makes a lot of uncomfortable decisions when it comes to ranking all-time centers. But I think maybe the thing that they could prevent, like an amendment, is maybe you say, hey, you have five, maybe have it to where it's like, hey, you have five rest games, rest, injury maintenance, whatever, however you want to define it. You have 5 or 10 games, however you want to describe it. But I'm not for punishing players that just get hurt and they end up playing 55 to 60 games. Because I've always felt like NBA voters used common sense on when to vote for players based off of availability. I mean, the Malcolm Brogdon Rookie of the Year against Joel Embiid was the biggest example of that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Totally agree, Parker. I kept you far too long. Go to your game coverage. Thank you for joining me. Parker Fleming, you can find him on Twitter at @Paka_Flocka. Make sure you subscribe to Substack Elitist. All proceeds go to St. Jude. When we come back, we'll dive into a trip around the NFL. You listen to Connor Dunning.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
On the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he is out. Every single day at this time, we take a trip around the NFL, and we're going to do it right now. So, some tough news for the Patriots today, specifically about wide receiver Stephon Diggs. He is facing a felony charge of strangulation and a misdemeanor charge of assault from an alleged incident on December 2nd. According to a police report, a woman went to police on December 16th and shared that she was working as a private chef on the date of the incident in question when Diggs entered her unlocked bedroom and allegedly smacked her across the face after they discussed money he owed to her. According to police, she said she attempted to push Diggs away when he allegedly tried to choke her with his elbow around her neck and later threw her onto the bed and said lies when she said she had not been paid. So this is a not very good situation for Diggs or the Patriots. More information will come out, but yikes, not good.
Not great.
Bijan Robinson is unbelievable. His performance last night almost brought me back from the depths of hell in a fantasy football championship game, but it did not. I'm sure he won a ton of people a championship last night. Has to have been one of the most valuable players this year. I know McCaffrey, I think, finishes running back one, but I think Robinson's probably running back two, if I had to guess. But this year,
real quick, but this year, Bijan was,
he's unbelievable. This year in the NFL, he leads the NFL in yards from scrimmage, most yards from scrimmage in a season in Falcons history, and the most 150-plus yard games this year. If you go and you look at the standings, he has 7 this year, then there's a gap, and it's everybody else. He has been unbelievable. He has lived up to the hype when he was drafted. Bijan Robinson, well done, sir. What a game.
Bijan, yep, RB2. Just RB2.
So, last night, there's a big conversation going on about did Matthew Stafford lose the MVP to Drake May after his performance last night? And I do think that it warrants a conversation. I still think that I'm leaning Matthew Stafford. I understand the arguments for Drake May, but I think that the Rams have played a harder schedule. They are close enough in yards. It's only a 200-150-yard gap between the two. Stafford has 42 touchdowns. Drake May has 34. They have the exact same number of INTs. Now, if you wanted to tell me Drake May is doing some things that we've never seen a quarterback do this season, I'm not going to disagree with you. I just think that Matthew Stafford deserves an MVP, and I think that it's his season to win it. But if you came to me and you said, hey, Drake May has that MVP, I'm not going to push back against you too hard. I just personally think that Matthew Stafford should still win it. I'm not sure I expect that to happen now. It feels like it's Drake May's now.
Yeah, it feels like it's Drake May's to lose, even though Like, those are the things you have to take into account. Like, as much as Dan Orlovsky on Twitter this afternoon has been trying to say, this isn't college football, strength of schedule doesn't matter.
It does matter.
It definitely does. Matthew Stafford's bad opponent in division is what? The Cardinals? And then the other three are all monsters? Drake May has had four games against the Jets and the Dolphins.
Right.
Just saying.
And I think when you look at the actual stats, the ones that Drake May leads in are very close. Like yards per attempt, 8.9 to 8. QB rating, 76.5 to 70.1. Passer rating, 112 to 108. Success percentage, 54 to 53. Like, it's so
super
close.
Super slim margins.
But then you have, like, total touchdowns. Stafford has 42. Drake May has 34. And then there's only 150-yard difference between the two. And I do think that Stafford played a harder schedule than
Absolutely.
Drake May. Like, yeah. Those four games against soft opponents matter. But, again, if Drake May wins it, I'm not going to be furious. I just think that Matthew Stafford should still win it despite a poor performance last night.
I tend to agree.
All right. That's going to be it for a trip around the NFL. When we come back, we are going to dive into small talk. And the Chargers sent out a curious tweet today about an all-time QB who is up for the Hall of Fame. We'll talk about that next. Welcome back into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. Just one more mention of Drake May and Matthew Stafford. During the break,
just got to hammer it in.
I found this stat, and I do think that this matters. It does matter to me. Drake May played the number 32 strength of schedule this year. Matthew Stafford played the number one, played the hardest schedule in the NFL this year. I think that matters when we're talking about MVP.
Yeah, so, just a little bit.
I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. But the Chargers are the subject of our small talk today because they sent out a very odd tweet today. They put out a picture of Drew Brees and was commenting on his quest for the Hall of Fame. And, George, I just want to ask you, because, listen, I think he has a Pro Bowl appearance with the Chargers, but ultimately they chose a different quarterback for their future. And when people think of Drew Brees, they think of the Saints.
New Orleans Saints.
He is a Saint. He's the best quarterback Saints have ever had, led them to a Super Bowl. If he goes into the Hall of Fame, it's certainly not going to be in a Chargers jersey. It's going to be all about his tenure with the Saints. So, George, was it fair that the Chargers tried to take claim of Drew Brees today?
No, it wasn't. I mean, like, as much as, like, for what it's worth, it's not like he didn't play for the Chargers.
Right.
He absolutely had, like, he had good years with the Chargers, right? That's a New Orleans Saint.
That's a Saint.
That's a Saint, like, right there. Like, it's...
I understand.
Have,
like,
some respect.
Just wait for Rivers.
Have
just
some class.
Just do the Rivers campaign. Like,
well, they already started it, and then he decided, we go and get this insurance back.
Yeah, good for him. Honestly, he was better than I expected him to be.
He's not playing next week.
He's not. He's hanging it up again. He's officially retired once again. He said, I'm super happy I got to come back, get a couple of games, and never thought in a million years I would get it. Really wonderful presser if you want to go listen to it. But I thought Philip Rivers...
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
It's good, but I agree.
Solid.
Chargers, Drew Brees ain't your guy. He's the Saints guy.
Figure
Just
it out.
Let them have it. That's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today. I want to thank Parker Fleming for joining us. Tomorrow we're going to have on David Cobb at 5 o'clock. We're going to do overreaction, not an overreaction, but stick around after the show at 6:30. You're going to get Grizzlies pregame tonight going up against the 76ers. Then at 7 o'clock, of course, you're going to get the fantastic Eric Hasseltine on the call. So stick around right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. This has been Connor Dunning with George Ruggiero, the champion of the 929 Fantasy League. Get home safely.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.